Hey, this is Greener Grass Podcast. We are your hosts, Carrie Wheat and Kelly McVeigh, now part of the Digitent Network. How's it going, guys? Thank you so much for tuning in. Before we get started, become a part of the Greener Grass family. Opt in for our e-newsletter. We send one out every month talking about us, our guests, and giving you guys any breaking news we might have. We'd love to have you. All right, today we have Jenna Hua, CEO and founder of Million Marker. With her own battle with infertility and her frustrations as a research scientist, she was motivated to found Million Marker, which makes mail-in test kits for toxic chemical exposures, and she provides education and resources for healthier living. She's an ardent believer in disease prevention, and she gives us some tips and some simple swaps just for our daily lives with our kids, what we should be using the household, what we should skip, and I think you're going to pick up some really useful things that you can change today that are easy to do. All right, guys, let's get started. Jenna, are you full Chinese?
I'm full Chinese.
Where were you born and raised?
So I was born in China, Kunming. So it's like a southwest of China, Yunnan province. And I came to US for high school and just stayed. So when I first came to US, I was in LA, so Torrance area. And then I came up here for school and didn't leave.
Your parents, are they still in China?
They were here and then they went back when I was in grad school. So now they're like full-time in China. So they're gonna, I guess like we can talk about this later but I'm gonna see them in a month and a half because we're actually expecting a baby girl next month. Through surrogacy, so.
That's amazing.
Yes.
Oh my God, this is amazing. So you have a surrogate right now that's cooking.
Yes,
like
that's cooking.
Cooking.
Yeah.
Oh, basically. So exciting. Okay, this is amazing.
You know, I mention occasionally what I do for an everyday job, and that's at a company called Hugh and Grace. And through that time at this company, not only do I evolve as a person in my health and wellness journey, but I'm educated by so many people. And today we have the founder and the chief executive officer of Million Marker. And I'm so excited about this. I told Carrie, I don't ever get nervous about these podcasts. And I was a little bit nervous today, but I was reading your bio and you're just such a big deal for our company. And so I'm so excited to bring you on, Jenna. And I would just like you to start off by sharing just a little bit about yourself, and you can share whatever you want. So just share a little bit about yourself.
Thank you so much for having me, Kelly and Carrie. It's really an honor, and it's really an honor to see how Hugh and Grace grow and how everyone in a company grow. So I'm really excited to be part of this, and I also see all the growth and everything. So hi, listener. I'm Jenna. I was trained in nutrition and environmental epidemiology. So that's sort of my background training, but about myself, I love to eat. I don't eat mushrooms, and my friend always tells me I'm kind of funny, but deep down, I think I'm a scientist, and I'm also a big nerd, a cool nerd.
Okay, I love this. You know, it's funny. I was at the zoo. This is a silly story, but this is very Kelly McVeigh. I was at the zoo a couple years ago, and I said to my son, I was like, come on, you big nerd, just being funny. And someone in front of me said, I'm a scientist and nerds are really cool. And I was like, listen, you are right. And I don't even know why I said that, but I love that. I look at your background, which is incredible. What made you choose to come to the US and to study at Stanford? Why was that the right decision for you?
Coming to the US, I didn't really make that decision. I think my parents made that decision for me. They think I would not survive in China.
Yeah.
I sort of grew up kind of free-spirited. I didn't really like school that much. I didn't really want to be, you know, cramped down and study a lot. I was just not like that. So they were worried that I'm not going to survive in that such competitive environment. So they decided that we should have come to the US and let me study here. That's why we came. And when I got here, I didn't know what I was doing.
Wait, they didn't think you could thrive in a competitive environment, so they sent you to Stanford?
I mean, they said they brought me here for high school, you know, then I kind of just like went my way. Like, you know, I didn't go to Stanford. I came here for high school. So I actually, like, when I got here, I didn't even go to a 4-year university first because I didn't want to take the SAT. My English wasn't good enough. So I actually went to a community college for the first 2 years of college. Then I transferred to Berkeley. So I did my undergrad in Berkeley. I really loved it. I avoided taking any kind of test possible. but I really love what I studied, and I really love doing the work. That's how I kind of just keep working my way up. But that was sort of a purely interest, and being very, very lucky to have met the mentors I have met, that they think I could do the work rather than I'm really good at studying. I never thought I was really good at studying. I'm just kind of doing what I like to do.
That kind of is such a testament in the sense that, because I do think the US, and I'm sure China is even more so, I don't know that, you can tell me, but so test driven and so hitting the mark. And I can say for myself, which I will not put myself on your playing field at all, but I was not book smart. I was not a test taker, but I was a super hard worker. I was super driven. Mm-hmm. And what works for me from a learning perspective, you know, when I found my niche, like, sky's the limit for me. So I love that you had mentors that saw that in you. Did you feel like school and academics were so different here from where you grew up?
At least when I first got here, it's very, very different. I mean, when I first got here, high school was pretty easy because pretty much everything in high school I studied in the US, I've learned it all in China in middle school. So that was a piece of cake. But then when you got to college, that actually got harder. Berkeley was no joke. I felt like I've never had to pull all-nighter, like, ever studying. I had to pull all-nighter when I was in undergrad, and I still got a B in class. So B or B minus. I was only hoping I was a straight B student.
Yeah, it's crazy. So I love that you kind of, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but you specialized in nutrition.
Yes. So I love food. So I, right after high school, I actually didn't even want to go to college. I want to go to culinary school. And my parents were like, no. You know, being Asian, you can't just go to culinary school. You have to go to college, get a proper degree. And nutrition is as close to food as I could find. And then I decided to study nutrition.
Carrie, does this ring any bells for you in the sense that I feel like we've had this conversation before, that your family very much, like, you went to college for one thing and then rerouted. And I think your family was all, and could still be a little bit like, what are you doing as an aerialist?
Oh no, it's so hard for them, for me to, like, I read your bio, Jenna. And I was like, man, you would make my parents so happy. You know what I'm saying? Just my sister's a CEO herself, and she's like a Wharton graduate. And after that, boxes were checked. No one in my family had to accomplish anything after that. It was awesome. But yeah, it's a lot of pressure. And are you the eldest?
Oh, I'm the only child. So I was born under the China one-child policy.
Oh, China is kind of eating their face on that one right now, because there's no women to marry all the millions of men that were born on the one-child policy. Okay, so Jenna, I was reading a little bit about Million Marker, and it's incredible. Can you please draw the line from getting your degree? I hope I'm not skipping too much, Kelly.
No, this is good. This is good. This
getting
is
your degree.
About. Yeah.
To this idea, this company, how you developed it, and then how you knew to, you know, just because you're good at this one niche thing doesn't mean you're good at building a company. So how did you do that, and what were the challenges?
Oh, wow. So many loaded questions. So I did nutrition. I loved it. And then I became a dietitian. It was through that experience I kind of realized nobody listened to me in a hospital. I was getting really frustrated. You know, I would spend 15 minutes trying to consult the patients about their diet, making them eat better, live healthier, but nobody listened to me. And then I would spend an hour charting. I got incredibly frustrated about that because that's not a good model for people to live a healthy lifestyle. It's not enough time to spend with patients. That's one thing. And the second, there's many other hurdles I can't change. I can't ask people to not go shop in a, go buy food in a fast food restaurant, right? I can't change the environment. So I got frustrated and I decided to go back to school and study environment. At the time, I thought, okay, if we can actually work out some way to change how our built environment, then I don't have to tell people what to do. You know, if we actually limit how many fast food restaurants and how many liquor store are in your area or near you, then people just don't even have the access to even buy like shitty food. So that I don't have to tell them what to do. So that was me being super ideal. And I went back to school and I studied environment of health and focusing on the food environment. So I was studying how the food environment, the distributions of restaurants and stores and what type of store and what type of restaurant can influence people's dietary choice. And I was hoping by studying that I could influence policy and how we're deciding on our urban planning. How do we set stores and restaurants and where do we put green space? Where do we put parks? So I was hoping to accomplish that. And that ended up to be a long shot. You know, after I finished my master, it's not even close to kind of getting to where I want to be to do these things. Then I did a PhD. It was still really far. And then I got frustrated again because during my study, it's like 7 years in grad school. What we do is we do these observational study. That means you follow people for a long time. You observe what happened to them. Then you write up the paper and then you publish and you go from there. But it was really frustrating because you're just observing. You're not really changing anything. You observe and you see where the problems are, but you couldn't do anything about it because that's the fundamental science question we're trying to answer is by observation. And I see the problem. And then, you know, during my PhD, I was studying how food environment would impact adolescents' obesity risk. And it was through that experience I kind of realized, actually, it's more than just where we buy food, what we eat. It's also what's in the food. But we're not really studying that. You know, even if you have a healthy diet, but if the food is contaminated, if the food has, you know, heavy metals or other toxins, your kid is still not going to be healthy. And besides that, you know, if you're, you know, lack of sleep, for example, if you have your stress up, your cortisol is up, that's also not healthy. So there's like your health is not just, it's not just about your food. It's also many other things. So from that experience, that kind of got me start thinking is how to address sort of more internal sort of exposure type of thing. So because during my PhD, I was studying, okay, how are people getting exposed? So it's everything is sort of external. But then given you and I have the same exposure externally, we would still respond very differently internally because we have different genes. So I was just trying to see how can I incorporate sort of your external exposure with internal exposure and also thinking through how do I change people's behavior? Because I was just observing and I want to make changes and I want to be able to make an impact. And that kind of led me to doing a postdoc. Stanford is where I did my postdoc is that I was trying to figure out, okay, how do I change people's behavior? What can I do? What can I learn to help change people's behavior? So my training over there is I was actually training under a health psychologist. So we're learning how to do these randomized control trials, behavioral change trials to see, okay, what kind of strategy we can use to change people's behavior so then they can live healthier.
And so then you start a company.
Yes.
I mean,
then I got frustrated again because.
Yes. Do you feel like, I mean, climbing any big mountain, right? There's all these obstacles and frustration, and it's almost like you're 10 steps ahead of where science, health, do you feel like it's starting to have a shift where people are starting to think about those things and there's more preventative instead of You know, do you feel that shift since you started this journey?
I think there's definitely a shift, especially after COVID. You know, before COVID, I think people are not thinking about wellness, right? People are not thinking prevention as much. COVID kind of exposed all these issues that we have in our healthcare system that we're not really focusing on prevention. If you think about who died during COVID, besides COVID itself, it's all the people with comorbidities. Like, you know, if you have other chronic illness, that will put you at way higher risk to have a COVID death than other conditions. But then how do you prevent those, you know, comorbidities, those conditions, is by start thinking about prevention. You know, how do I prevent myself from getting diabetes? How do I live better? And all these things to kind of put people start thinking about, okay, prevention, and then linking that to wellness. And I think there's definitely a shift from that. And I mean, you will always, so this journey, you will always meet naysayers anyway, like everybody does. And I think I'm just like, you know, way I joke about it with my friends and stuff. Sometimes I'm just like, I'm kind of insensitive towards these things. It's kind of just like, you know, you filter out the noise and then you kind of just focus on what you want to do. And I think that helped me face some of the naysayers. I mean, Carrie asked me, like, how did I start this and then fun being in academia and then just like run a company. I think it was also through a lot of mistakes. I don't know what I'm doing. Like half the time, I still don't know what I'm doing, but you kind of just do it and then you learn during the process, and also be able to have a team. And I'm sure you guys have a great team and you learn from each other and you kind of go together.
Yes. Since you started, what would you say you're the most proud of or excited about starting Millionaire? Like that whole process, it had to be a lot of, you said, like you're learning, you figure it out, you make a mistake, you shift, the world is shifting a little bit. So all of that's shifting alongside of you building this. What do you feel the most proud of since you started it?
I'm proud we're still alive.
Yes, I get that. I totally get that. Yes.
I think that's the first thing I'm most proud of, because for an early idea to latch on, it just takes time. And I, you know, when I first started as a startup, you hear these big successful stories, you know, people exit and people get acquired and then people make loads of money and blah, blah, blah. It's kind of unreal. And I just came to realize to actually, if you want to really build something that has impact, it's going to take time. And I feel that it's probably going to take us 10 years to actually make something useful and something that sticks. And we're like more than 4 years in, and I felt that we barely scratched the surface. But I'm happy we are still around and we're still alive and we're getting recognized and we are doing more clinical trials. So we're still pushing the science forward. So I'm pretty proud of that.
Jonna, for our listeners, if they wanted to go to your website and make use of the resources you have there, how would you say what they can get out of the website and what they can get out of a lot of the information that you guys have there?
So a lot of the information we have on Million Marker website is mainly to educate the public about why they need to care about hormone disrupting chemicals, why they need to care about their environmental exposures. So there are different sections on the website. We have a huge focus on pregnancy or pre-pregnancy planning, because that's actually a really, really critical time. I mean, I think for many of the Hugh and Grace fans or listeners or people follow Kelly, follow you guys, many of you are probably already aware of what EDCs are, what are the hormone disrupting chemicals. So these are chemicals that actually disrupt or mess with your hormones. And your hormones kind of works as a symphony. They're like chemical messengers in the body. You only need like tiny, tiny bit of amount to, you know, have any, like have a lot of downstream impact that from, you know, your metabolism to your mood, to your sleep, your growth, everything is controlled by hormones. So you really don't want your hormone to be messed up. The issue with EDCs, you only need tiny amounts, same as your hormones, to start having impact. And we don't have safe levels for EDCs. So when it comes to EDC, you want it to reduce. And these chemicals pass through mom to babies, it crosses placenta, and even passes generations. So by reducing your exposure, especially, you know, before you get pregnant, it's really, really important to have to increase your, you know, egg quality, sperm quality, and then you will create a really good environment for your own kid and your kids' kids, your grandkids, basically. So it's like, start making these changes before you get pregnant. You're literally getting the biggest bang for your bucks. So we have a lot of material around that, and then we want people to start paying attention. But reducing EDC exposure, it's a life course approach. Anytime during your life, you should be thinking about it. So we have a lot of material around that. And we have a lot of materials, specific strategies, how to actually do that. Because I think one thing people really want is, you don't want to feel doom and gloom. I mean, the world can be doom and gloom. When we talk about these chemicals, yes, you're surrounded by it. But we don't want people to feel doom and gloom, because there are things you cannot do, but there are many, many things you can do. Considering the stuff that you can do, say, for example, you can't really change your outside air quality, right? And then for some of the persistent chemicals, once you're exposed to, you can't get rid of them. You can't change that. But there are many of these transient chemicals, like many actions that you can actually take. So we want to empower people to take actions. So we give a lot of practical tips about how to take actions. And lastly, we are very keen on translating the science to the public. One thing I was really frustrated, and part of the reason why I started Million Marker, is that we completely lack of science translation in a scientific world. You know, scientists do these experiments, do these studies, and they publish a paper and just stays in the repository of these papers. The public have no idea what's going on, and there isn't really the cross translation between what we find in scientific studies and the public knowledge. Like these chemicals, we literally have been studying them for decades. But if you go on the street and you ask someone about like these chemicals, like probably 80% of the people, they have no idea, and people don't even know why I need to care. The only reason, you know, people heard about BPA is because they've seen some of the water bottle or can are labeled BPA free. And then when they see that, they're like, they ring the bell, okay, that might not be good for me. But they have no idea like why they even need to care about this. What does BPA do? Like, what about other chemicals? What are some strategy you need to reduce your exposures? They just have no idea. So one thing we really want to do is actually translating the science to the public, making sure people understand. Because once you learn it, you can't unlearn it. And knowledge is power. Unless you know, you don't know what to do, right?
I love everything you're saying. If you had to, I mean, we will link to Million Marker, we'll link to your Instagram. I think you do such a great job of, you're so consistent about popping on there, educating people, sharing others. And I feel like it's because it's so true and such a passion. I feel like this is a passion project. Being a part of a startup at Hugh and Grace, it's like a little baby and you want it to win and you are so passionate about it that it's like you're just like, come on. So I love, we can link to those things too. If you were going to give everyone a couple things that they could easily just think about, you know, we talk about simple swaps at Hugh and Grace a lot, but what mm-hmm. would be a couple of things that you would say to someone who this is new knowledge for, that, you know, we'll point to the direction of Million Marker where there's so much information and education, but what are a couple of things that you would share with people to think about?
Number one is avoid plastic as much as possible. That's one thing. I mean, plastic is a really complicated issue we can't completely avoid, but I think people need to start thinking about it ASAP, especially parents with young kids who are thinking about getting pregnant. There are a ton of harmful chemicals in plastic, and the people are not aware. So, you know, get rid of your plastic water bottle, use a stainless steel one, use the glass one. Your kitchen Tupperware, get rid of those. Get rid of your Saran wraps, use a beeswax wrap. And and stop microwaving plastic. So just get rid of plastic as much as possible. I think that's number one. It's hard, but you got to try. And I think sometimes people say that, oh, I don't have time, I don't have the resource. If you think about it, if you think about this as an investment to yourself and also for your kids, it's a good investment. And also, if you think about making these swaps, right? If you buy a glass Tupperware, it's going to last way longer than using any plastic ones. So it can add up. It also adds up to the environmental costs, because these plastics just end up in the ocean, in the waterway, and become microplastics, and then come back, get us, like contaminating our water system and our body. So I really encourage people to make these swaps. So that's number one. And number two, which Hugh and Grace is already doing a really great job, is these personal care product swaps. Avoid fragrance at all costs. Because there could be thousands of chemicals, again, made of this term fragrance. And I encourage people to avoid it. And then once you avoid one, you will start avoiding others. So that's like number two. And last one is try to use a water filter if you can at home, because our water is one thing that we have control over. And the public water system, depending on where you live, many times can have these harmful chemicals, and then definitely use a water filter.
Do you feel like, this will be my last question, and then Carrie, if you have anything before we wrap, but do you feel like when you think of, you know, I was blown away when I found out there wasn't regulation on so many things. I think, you know, thinking about that you came from China, United States, like everyone always talks about the United States is so great. And then finding out that there's not regulations on personal care products, there's not regulations on a lot of the materials that we use, cleaning. Do you feel frustrated sometimes with politics, government, all of those things, because it's like an uphill battle? You're trying to educate and teach and help. And then the government isn't doing that on their side of things to help regulate these big, huge companies that are just pouring out all of these products into the world.
Definitely frustrated about that. And it's not even just frustrated. It's like dark. I think it's cynical. Like it's dark. It should not happen. And my most recent experience is that, you know, I started looking at all the stuff that, like formulas and like all these things that we feed our kids and that our kids use. It just like really crazy to me that some of the formula, the first ingredient is like sugar, or like a lot of baby products are completely made of plastic, which is like just crazy to me. But that said, I think there are things we can do, because companies are not going to change unless consumers ask them to. And same as the policymakers. And I think we have the responsibility, and also we have the collective action to act together to inform companies and inform policymakers. Because if we're not doing that, then things just gonna slip and things gonna just stay the way they are. But if we are collectively working together, you know, people voting with their dollars, you know, buying sustainable product, buying good products, that's sending a signal. And people start doing, you know, taking actions, using less plastic, that's sending a signal. So, and we also need to just start taking action to protect ourselves. So I feel that's also a signal. And while it's frustrating, but there are certain things that we can do. So while being frustrated, I still want people to feel empowered that you still have quite a bit of control over your life and protecting yourself.
Oh my goodness. The one thing that strikes me is that, like, I read your bio earlier, and in my mind was like that stereotypical, like, not that you were stereotypical, but like just high performing Asian woman, you know? But really, your motives and your purpose are so different from that. Like, from what you've told us, you didn't just climb a ladder. You were just curious and wanted to fight a battle, and you needed the resources that you needed, and that's why you took the steps that you did. I always love asking people this. I am first generation Chinese American, and looks like you are too, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are also, I don't know the statistics, but I know it's pretty small, the number of CEOs that are women, the number of CEO women who are women of color.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find, is there a glass ceiling a lot of times when you're working day to day with different people? Do you feel like, are those barriers all the time? Like, do you come up against them every single day, or no? And you feel like you don't have to deal with that. What is your experience?
I felt like I probably had to have deal with it. I mean, everyone, I think any women deal with it. It's not just Asian, not just color. Yeah, sure. Like when you are a colored woman, you face more obstacles. I think that definitely have occurred. And I think what made work for me is I kind of like, granted, like me being insensitive, that I kind of tuned out a lot of these stuff, that I just don't think about it. I mean, I'm not saying that we should ignore that. It's really important to empower women, empower colored people, colored women, and to achieve their goals. But I also think it's really important for us to think about how are we dealing with it. I don't think we should just like, okay, people putting us down, that we should just like let ourselves down. Like, we gotta have to have some kind of like response to that. Like, tune yourself out or do something so you don't get put down. Like, some way to address that. And I think of sort of maybe my own kind of like defense mechanism when I face these things is I kind of just tune it out and do my own thing. That's sort of like my strategy. I also just feel that I don't have time to think about it. So that's another strategy. But I think it's important to empower others. So then again, it takes a village. So when you have other peers who are, you know, Asian American, women of color, or other women CEOs, and you can work together, then that's, you know, you're building a village, and that's really important. So that's like how I'm thinking. But I definitely felt that way when I was first starting the company, start pitching with the venture capitalists. And I definitely felt that feeling a bit isolated and then feeling not being seen. But that didn't really impact me from moving forward. I mean, there's always way out. Like, yeah, sure, you don't give me money and I'll just go somewhere else. So, and I also think not giving up and not taking no for an answer, that's also really important. Because I think a lot of women, when they face these issues, I've seen among some of my friends, that they kind of just give up. But I think it's really important not to give up. But that part is also having to do with your circle of friends. Who are you surrounding yourself with? And then you have the support system that, you know, don't just take things just by yourself. Get it out. Talk to your friends and then have a support system to support you through this. And I think that's also really important.
I mean, Jenna, how did you like sit across from these like, you know, super wealthy people and get them to give you money?
They didn't.
They didn't. They didn't. Somebody did. Did anybody?
We did get some angel checks, which helped enormously. We did crowdfunding. That's also worked. And then we applied a ton of NIH grants. So that also helped. So that's why right now we're mainly funded by National Institute of Health. So that's who's funding us currently.
No, I think the common thread of through all of this and what I've learned about you is that it's like, you like are on this trajectory and it's like, you're going, obstacle, frustration, you go, obstacle, frustration, you go. And regardless of being like a woman CEO, a Chinese American, like all of these things, those are just a part of the thread of you continuing to push forward. And it's like you almost like have blinders on, like, this is what I'm doing, this is the mission, and those are just distractions and obstacles that you don't have time for.
Yeah, kind of.
Do you have anything else, Carrie, before we...
Oh, Jenna, I'm just so excited to meet you. I also, like, you know, obviously you're Kelly's guest first, but, like, I want to, like, ask you a million questions about the surrogacy thing. I want to ask you why you chose that. I want to talk to... I have a podcast about pregnancy.
Okay.
Like, separately, that I would love to have you on. I know I'd love to talk to you for 5 hours, but... when it comes to, I looked at your website and it looks like you have a lot of talking about fertility and toxins and all this stuff. Is that the bedrock of what you've been focused on, or is it kind of just one section of it?
That's one section of it, but that has a lot to do, also have a lot to do with why I started the Million Marker, is because of my own fertility struggle. One of the reasons, besides my, you know, research and the frustration with academia, one of the biggest driver for starting Million Marker is my fertility struggle. So I had 4 super late stage miscarriages due to an autoimmune condition, but the doctors was not able to diagnose me until my 4th pregnancy loss. So every time it was just like, good luck next time. There was just no answers. And I was frustrated. I just looking for answer myself, you know, because I studied this, I know environmental chemicals or environmental exposures could impact fertility and impact pregnancy. When I went to the doctor, I was asking for a test like this, testing my environmental exposures. They were saying the only test available is heavy metal. But I'm like, are you kidding me? We've literally been studying this for decades. How could we not having a test allowing women or men to understand exposures and do something about it? That wasn't one available. But I know the technology exists. I know the method exists. I know there's data. So that also kind of prompted me to start Million Marker, that I just want to give people tools to understand their exposures and also give myself a sense of assurance. You know, just understanding, I felt like, you know, I've always lived a healthy lifestyle. I exercise, I sleep well, I eat well. I don't have any family history, yet I'm like having this issue that nobody have answers for. So I was just looking for answers myself.
4, 5, 6, you had 4 late stage miscarriages.
Yes.
I'm so sorry. That is horrific.
It was dramatic and it was really bad. And each one is like 20, 21 weeks. So it was bad. It was bad. But it also kind of prompted me to start, you know, during my first loss, I was really down. Like, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to talk about it. You know, I was just kind of closed off. And then after my second, I started opening up to friends and family, and it turns out many of my friends, you know, if you have kids late, many of us have issues, some kind of issue, you know, it's big or small. So once I opened up, people also started opening up to me. And I felt that we also need to talk about this more. So then you can actually have the support and then have the understanding from others. We just don't talk about it enough.
I totally agree. I feel like it's so crazy because I think for me, and I don't know if it's because I'm older, I hear more and more, and I'm a part of Human Grace. So I do feel like that's a part of our story, but the amount of people that struggle to conceive or to carry to full term, it just feels like the numbers are increasing. And I don't know, I know multiple people that have had a struggle and a journey. Are the numbers increasing in that direction?
Oh, yes. 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 We see increasing more miscarriages. Infertility rate is definitely going up. And the most recent data is also showing, you know, sperm quality have gone down like 50%. So if we're not addressing this problem, and it's going to be very, very problematic in the future.
So the reason why I wasn't jumping in is because she's singing so loud. So loud, but it's so cute. I mean, she's part of the podcast. Did you guys ever see that movie? It's like they were trying to save this one pregnant woman because she was the last one on Earth.
I have not.
Oh my God, I have to look up this movie. But like they were trying to like smuggle her across the city and get to her to a safe port because she's the last pregnant person because the entire world had gone infertile because it was the apocalypse. Jenna, this is exactly like what you're talking about.
We'll get there.
I know, me too. Me too. But yeah, that's what I was thinking. But then you guys decided to go the surrogacy route. And you guys, when are you guys expecting?
Next month.
Oh my God. So you're gonna
congratulations.
Like congratulations. And yes, where is your surrogate compared to where you live?
Oh my God. Long story. Our surrogate is in Georgia, but Georgia the country, not Georgia the state. So it's in Eastern Europe.
Okay. I keep on hearing stories about Georgia. Is that a safe place right now?
It is a safe place. It's near Ukraine. So it's like the west side of Georgia is Turkey. And then you have Ukraine and Russia on top. And then you have Azerbaijan, Armenia on the other side.
Okay. So does that mean that you're going to get on a plane to Georgia very soon now?
Yes. I'm actually leaving in a month to go to Georgia.
I'm so excited for you. It's a great story for you.
It's been a long journey. We started this process, me like the first time getting pregnant, it was almost 10 years ago. So it's been like 10 years.
You are ready. You are ready to be a mom.
Yes, we're excited.
Jenna, thank you so much for carving out the time for us. I know me and Kelly know that you are so, so, so busy. So we are grateful to have you. And I hope, listeners, that you just got one or two things out of that you could swap out, switch to go into the direction of healthier living. All right, my friends, please honor us with a 5-star rating and a review. It helps so much. We appreciate it so much. And if you would like to be on the podcast or know someone who you think would be a wonderful guest, please reach out to us at Grand Rev Creative on Instagram. We check our DMs. And thank you so much for being here. Kelly now has a podcast with Hugh and Grace called What's Next on Apple and all the other ones, Spotify as well. And I have The Expecting Aerialist. So if you love to hear the sound of our voices and it soothes you, please tune in. All right, my friends. Over and out. This is Greener Grass.